What's up, everyone, and welcome to the Elevate Experience,
the podcast about overcoming struggles and adversity and how that relates to addiction, recovery, and health. I am your host and the CEO of Elevate Addiction Services, Angie Manson.
And I'm Dallas Terrell, co-host and life intervention counselor at Elevate. Thank you so much for joining us, and let's jump right in.
Thank you, everybody, for tuning in. Today's special guest, we have Scott Friend. Scott has worked with me on and off over, we were just talking about this, Scott, maybe the last 25 years or so.
Yeah, definitely.
So we've known each other a long time, and we've worked together a lot. And one of my favorite people, Scott's held many different positions within the organization. And what he's been doing now primarily is he's the client's one-on-one counselor, is what we call him here. So we're going to get some perspective from Scott about that process and how it integrates with the rest of the program and some of his experience as well. So welcome to the show, Scott.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, welcome, Scott. It's good to have you in here.
Yeah, I appreciate it.
Yeah, familiar face, good-looking face over there.
There you go. Scoring points, definitely.
Nice. Yeah, so tell us a little bit about your role here, Scott. What does a normal day for Scott look like?
Well, a normal day...
If any.
If there's a normal day, you know, my job solely revolves around seeing the clients individually as an individual counselor. So it really depends on how many people I have on my caseload and what their needs are and where they are in the program. But typically, you know, I see most people at least once a week, and then other people that request more time or I think that they need more time, I'll double up and do twice a week.
Double up?
Yeah, yeah. Especially if they're, you know, here for a short amount of time.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
So how long is like a typical session? Is it even like something that you can put a time limit on or what would you say?
Well, the standard would be a 50-minute hour. Basically, that's 50 minutes, and then it's always been a 50-minute hour, and then you have 10 minutes for documentation or whatever. And it doesn't, we don't have to adhere to that. It could be an hour, it could be an hour and 15 minutes. Typically, though, an hour is what I was trained was a therapeutic amount of time. And if you go over that, then people start to lose interest and mm-hmm. you get tired. So I try to keep it at between 50 minutes and an hour.
Gotcha. I like that. I like the purpose behind it too.
Yeah.
So what are some of the main things that you work with them on personally? Because we've talked about other parts of the program, you know, when they're in the different phases and when they're doing different work. How does your one-on-one integrate with where they're at in the program? Or is there a specific goal you're trying to accomplish with these conversations?
Well, there's definitely specific goals. I always start my sessions off with asking how they're doing first and if they're having any issues and what's going on, you know, keeping it light in the beginning. I always ask where they are in the program, and then because that gives you a lot of avenues to go in the discussion, you know, and then they'll talk about maybe they're doing mindfulness and they're looking at losses. And so that's a great place to start. And mm-hmm. I'll ask them, well, what are you getting out of this part of the program, and having them probably tell me in more detail than what they write or what they're discussing in group. And so it can go in a lot of different ways. A lot of times what we spoke about the previous week will pick up as well. We'll continue on with that. And it really depends on the individual, where they're at. Some people respond really well to individual therapy and others just want to give you an update. And so at that point, then I'm kind of thrust in a role of having to ask them more questions about what's going on. And I have a pretty good sense of what their needs are based on our previous conversations or what they came in with. So we'll just go from there. And it's pretty easy to fill an hour.
Yeah, I would imagine.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's very individualized. I mean, there is a set amount of things you want to accomplish with the time you're there, but it's also individualized.
Absolutely.
Based on them because they're coming in with different traumas and different
right,
things.
Right, right, right. Absolutely, yeah. It's interesting because, you know, I was talking to somebody last week and what they verbalized was like, I feel like I'm the only one that ever has experienced this. And my response was, you know, there's no original issues anymore, right?
It's very true.
Yeah.
I mean, we all come in with the same amount of trauma, the experiences and the consequences, and the context probably are different, but we all feel pain. We all feel disappointment. And so, yeah, we've all been there.
They kind of just manifest in different words or different contexts. Like
in different
saying ways.
Yeah. I mean, you know, loneliness is loneliness. It doesn't matter if it came from a specific trauma, you know, disappointment, you know, a low sense of self, you know, we all suffer from that coming into treatment. So we just take off in different directions. Some people have specific traumas, you know, and again, my initial goal is for, you know, cognitive, emotional, and physical stabilization. So the physical stabilization is taken care of in detox. And the cognitive, emotional is, you know, what can we do to alleviate some of that so you can maximize your program? So you're not hung up on that, those issues, so you can actually gain from the program you're doing. And again, others, they just come in and maybe they lack the initial insight into their issues. And I find that extremely interesting because, you know, this program differs, this modality differs a lot than my previous experience. And I've since over the last 30 years of probably 8 or 9 different programs that are all medical model and they're shorter term. So one of the benefits of this program, obviously, is the length of time. You just have more time. People start to wake up and realize that they're in treatment and they have issues. And that's a plus. Secondly, a bigger issue has always been in the medical model is very prescriptive, meaning that as a therapist, I'm telling you what your problem is and what your solution is. And hopefully you'll run with that and go to, you know, support groups. Here it's about self-discovery. I'm not telling you what your problem is. But what I find interesting is, you know, maybe the first, second, or third session, I may suggest some things and people will say, no, that doesn't apply to me. You know, and then 2 or 3 more sessions later, they're telling me exactly what I told them previously that they discovered.
In their words, though.
Yeah, in their words, as if it's never been said. And that's fascinating because they're developing their own awareness versus me telling them.
Yeah.
And that is, by and large, the best part of this program in comparison to the other modalities I worked in.
Wow.
Well, and it goes so much further. If the person can realize that themselves, it means way more than, you know, mom or dad telling them what their problem is, psychiatrist telling them what their problem is.
Right.
If they're like, oh my God, I just realized what my problem is. It's like, then they're causative. They have awareness of it. Then they can alter or change things due
absolutely.
To that.
Absolutely. And it's you can see just how they light up, you know, their eyes light up because like, whoa, I discovered something really important about myself. It's like, yeah, I told you that, you know, 4 weeks ago, but you take credit for it. That's fine.
Like our first session, I said you were a good guy, you know?
And that's, again, that's what I really, really respect and appreciate about this program is it's not me telling you what your issue is. It's you discovering what your own issues are and what your goals are and what you want from life.
Yeah. And you find that to be, I guess, compared to the medical model, like in the past, like more effective?
Oh, absolutely. Because again, as Angie said, you know, once you have the awareness, you'll act on that.
Right.
And you'll make changes in your own life. Whereas before our best hope was, you know, go to meetings.
Yeah. Right?
Hopefully you'll take what little bit you got from here and go to meetings and they'll fix you. Here, people are starting to heal themselves. And yeah it's
powerful.
It is powerful. And it, you know, in this field, as you guys know, we go through burnout frequently, you know, and we'll cycle through that constantly. In the past programs I worked at, you know, you go through burnout so quickly because you don't see a lot of progress. And the responses are just kind of like, you just get blank stares. And here it's like you actually see people change and you're just like, wow, this is good stuff.
Yeah. So would you say, I mean, I guess speaking from your personal experience, would you say like the burnout for you happens way less or like the cycles are way longer?
Right.
For you personally?
Definitely the burnout happens less and I don't experience like frustration or burnout as quickly.
Gotcha.
And part of that is because, you know, in this modality, most often the clients are working as hard as the professionals.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Right. Sure, sometimes we work harder than them, but my experience in the medical models, I always worked harder than the clients.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I was always more passionate and interested in their recovery than they were.
Yeah.
And it's just the opposite here.
Yeah.
That's really good to hear. We were in a meeting, you know, with the clinical staff, and we were, one of the women that's a counselor was expressing struggles with this person they keep trying to bring up and trying to bring up. And that was kind of the viewpoint I shared, is like, they need to meet us halfway. We can't care about this more than they care about this. I mean, in the beginning, yeah, I get it. We're trying to get them stabilized and, you know, here and centered. But then after that, they've got to contribute to their sobriety as well, or right, they're not going to be successful out there.
Right. Right.
Yeah. I really love that analogy.
Right. And again, they, you know, they work hard here. And one of the things, and I may be jumping a bit, but when people are close to graduation, I always tell them or make a suggestion that, you know, when you're thanking people, you need to thank yourself.
Of course.
You know, we provide a great program. We provide the staff and the framework, but you did all the work, right? You're the one that came to these realizations. You're the one making the changes. So, you know, honor yourself by acknowledging that.
Yeah, no, that's huge. Yeah, we definitely do a lot of that in the program too, of kind of like validating yourself and validating your wins and kind of pushing that like self-discovery. And,
absolutely.
You know, even like we talked about with the episode with Dan, the education process. And, you know, if you think about it, if they get with Scott for 1 hour, they still spend another 5 to 6 hours doing other things.
Right.
So that's like a full inclusive 7 hour day looking at yourself times 50, 60, 70, 80 days, whatever it may be.
Yeah.
That's a lot of personal work.
It is.
It is. Well, and it's interesting too, because, you know, and we talked about this in previous episodes, is we're asking them to take full accountability and responsibility for their actions.
Right.
That's a hard process. So if you're able to criticize and find your own faults, you also, on the flip side, which I actually think is much harder for people, is validate and acknowledge yourself. Like you just said, it seems like, you know, addicts are more than willing to say, yes, I did that, I did that, I did that. But the like acknowledging when they did something good seems to be a lot harder for them.
It really, mm-hmm, it really is. And I was meeting with somebody earlier today, and we were talking about how easy it is to beat ourselves up.
Mm-hmm.
Yet how much more difficult it is to build ourselves up. We don't necessarily gravitate towards, oh, I did some great things today. It's always, I did these things wrong. And,
mm-hmm,
and you know, that's just a combination of factors over the course of life, where that's, we just learn those behaviors, and it's switching that to like, no, something as simple as, you know, I showed up on time is a big deal.
Right.
For a lot of people.
Yeah. Something they've been not good at for a long time. It's like, dude, take your wins, man. You showed up.
Absolutely, right.
I mean, let that be enough today, you know?
Those add up to big things.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
And that's part of them building their self-esteem and all that, going right out into the world, as opposed to being cowed and scared. They're more strong and confident, so they can confront life when it hits them.
Yeah.
Without crushing themselves and caving in and, you know, victimizing themselves.
Right.
I like that. I had one question for you, Scott. What is like your favorite like theme or topic or like idea to discuss, or yeah, I guess just to discuss with clients? Like, do you have one thing that, like, you know, is your favorite conversation to have with a client?
I don't think it's one thing. I think it's one approach that, mm-hmm, I've come to be more knowledgeable about and respect. And I really am, what certain clients are receptive to working on, past conflicts that are more or less buried in their unconscious, subconscious. Mm-hmm. You know, we're just not aware of how we replicate, you know, early life behaviors over and over and over again, and we can't figure out, why am I doing the same thing over and over again?
Right.
And so, you know, we do a lot of CBT stuff here, cognitive behavioral therapy. On occasion, depending on who it is and how receptive they are, I'll utilize internal family systems, which focuses more on allowing the subconscious to speak in so many ways. And then they recognize, like, oh, yeah, this is connected to when I was age 5. And I'm just repeating the same event over and over. The players are different, but the event's the same.
Totally.
And I've only really become interested in that in the last 5 years, from going back to school and going and seeing my own stuff,
mm-hmm, play out
and, yeah, going, yeah, I've done this over and over again, and then, you know, getting my own support and help to overcome those things.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Yeah. Great answer. I follow-up question. So I think as like counselors, it's cool to look at like how our own recovery plays a, mm-hmm, role in our job, and like how, absolutely, we help clients. And so that's kind of what I was hearing you say, is like going back to school and seeing the internal family systems.
Internal family systems is one approach that uses CBT and some other theoretical approaches, but yeah.
But so like you understand it and then apply it to yourself, and then now you have the ability to help other people kind of explore that same topic. And to me, I just find that to be extremely interesting.
Yeah. You know, having more awareness about my own stuff, my own issues, makes me much more effective when I'm working with others and their issues. Because again, they're very similar issues. And it's like, oh yeah, I know what you're going through because I did the same thing, and this is what I did. You know, absolutely. It's interesting. My first job, I went to, and this was, 86, a long time ago, 1986. And I was a brand new counselor, and I was just completely lost. And I lost sight of my own recovery because I was substituting my work for my recovery. Right. I didn't think I needed to go to meetings or support or outpatient counseling because I'm here saving lives, and so that's my recovery. And that,
yeah, absolutely.
You know, so it's vitally important that as professionals, this is our job, but our recovery is our recovery, and it's separate. And we need to keep working on ourselves.
Yeah, I love that.
Yeah, and I would say that probably happens around here more often than we realize because, you know, you think you're working with the clients, therefore you're working on your own sobriety, and that's not the case. It's not like a one and done, now I'm fixed. This is a like lifelong, keep working, new things come up, work through that, talk about that. Right. We got to keep working ourselves. We can't just like say that's it, we're good for the rest of our lives. It's a constant work in progress.
Yeah, and I think that's why I find that kind of topic so interesting, is because the ability for you to be effective as a counselor is almost equal to your own recovery.
Absolutely.
I feel like that.
I think that's an axiom that is universal. Again, if you were to go to the gym, who would you prefer to have as your trainer? Somebody in great shape or somebody that's really out of shape?
Who's slacking. Yeah,
who are you going to respond to more? It's like, no, I want to be like that guy in great shape.
Yeah. The gym always comes up in recovery analogies. I think it's so funny.
It's an important part of recovery here.
Yeah. Right? And it's simple to understand. Like I always tell people, like, you know, if you stopped going to the gym, would you get to stay in shape? And they say no. And I was like, okay, well, if you stop participating in groups and meetings and therapy, why do you get to stay happy or sober?
Right.
Like you don't. But we think we do sometimes, and it's a good conversation to have.
It is. And I was always taught that recovery is either progression or regression. So you're either moving forward or moving backwards. It's just what you choose to do. Right?
Absolutely. And you're right. The longer you do it, I think you can get complacent. You know, I've been sober 10 years. I've been 15 years. You get complacent. Yeah. You know, I'm doing this, family and life. And you forget, like, you still have to keep moving forward just with your sobriety and you know, your therapy. Absolutely. And handling your own stuff that comes up because life changes and you gotta keep rolling with it.
Absolutely.
Yeah. What do they say? You can't get sober off yesterday's recovery.
That's true. Yeah. Yeah. I haven't heard that in a long time, but that's true.
I think my dad said that one. He's been sober for like 35 years. So
yeah.
He's got all the analogies.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right.
No, that's a good one.
Here's a question for you, Scott. So I know, you know, throughout all your years, you've been in and out of AA a lot and NA. And, you know, obviously we support them as another modality, but we also have differences. What would you say is one of the bigger differences that we have, and you can see the success of us having it that way?
Yeah, and there's some very obvious differences. You know, I got sober in AA, and at that time, I accepted the general consensus that was the only way. Mm-hmm. You know, if you don't go to meetings, you're going to drink or use. If you don't do the steps, you're going to drink or use. And ultimately, you're going to die. And I believe that because I didn't know any better.
Yeah.
What I like, again, about another aspect of this program is we offer different avenues. I mean, they all roads lead to recovery.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I've never had a problem with the 12-step programs. That just was never an issue with me. However, what I've seen here is, you know, you can do SMART. You can do conscious recovery. You can do other things that will enhance your own life. And it doesn't have to be just 12-step. You know, if I stood up and said that at a meeting, I'd be shot. But that's what I believe. You know,
Good thing this is for the public, Scott. So Sorry, guys. Yeah.
So it, yeah, I think it's important. I mean, if people want to go to 12-step meetings, great. Fantastic. Yeah.
And we often encourage that when they leave here, because a support system is better than no support system.
Right.
Any day of the week, especially a group of like-minded individuals that are sober and in recovery and wanting the best for each other.
Absolutely. You know, and if you want to do smart, go do smart. I mean, whatever's going to make your life better, then go do it.
Yeah. Right. If you want to do both, do it.
Do both.
I always tell clients, I'm like, dude, go to AA meetings, meet some sober people. Like, because a lot of people come in here being like, oh, I didn't like 12 steps, so now I'm here. And I feel like they expect us to be like, yeah, screw 12 steps. Like, we're holistic, you know,
right.
Like not. And it's like, dude, I want you to get sober. Whatever that looks like, let's do it.
Yeah.
You know, so I always advocate to find sober people. I don't, like you said, right? Like getting sober is getting sober. All roads that lead to recovery are good roads to travel.
Absolutely.
So if you need to go meet people, go meet people. If you want to supplement your meditation and CrossFit and exercise and cognitive behavioral therapy and therapists and outpatient with AA meetings, like whoever says that's a bad idea, you should question their friendship, you know?
Right. or their motives.
Absolutely.
Because, I mean, and we held the modality conference a couple of years ago, and that was the whole purpose, is for everybody to sort of explore alternative treatment methods and empower one another to support each other, as opposed to, no, my way's best. No, my way is the only one that works. Where we all work together with the same common purpose is we're just trying to get people sober.
Right.
Yeah.
But I like what you said, Dallas, about the support, you know, and I'll tell people that are resistant to any type of support group, any meetings, regardless of what they are. It's like, look, you need to meet people like yourself, you know, and going to meetings is great because whatever meetings you go to have core beliefs, but more recovery happens outside of the meetings with those recovering people than you'll find in meetings.
Of course.
Right.
Absolutely.
So if you're not hanging out with other people in recovery, you're missing out on so much.
Yeah. What are you doing? Yeah. I think that's a big point too, because a lot of things that come up for clients is like, we build the life that we wanted to have. So prior to treatment, that life doesn't look that good. And you don't know, like, you know, I have clients, I'm like, how many sober people do you know? And they're like, none. You guys, like you're the only weirdos, you know, that I know that are sober. And so like in leaving here, they don't have that support group. So like you're saying, that putting emphasis on how important it is to create that and where to find it is like a massive treatment goal.
Right.
That's often overlooked. And, you know, I'm glad that we're talking about how important it is.
Yeah. Provide the opportunity for other people to get to know you.
Right.
You know?
Right.
It's like you're cheating other people by not letting them get to know you.
I like that.
Oh, I really like that.
Yeah, it's a different perspective. Make yourself wrong for not being like friendly.
Yeah.
Or reaching out. Well, because, you know, an addict, it's very self-centered, individualized, isolated. So we really got to push people to not be that person so they don't slip back into those old habits.
Yeah.
Of course.
Because it's so easy to go back into that isolation and loneliness and woe is me.
Right.
It's like, well, there's all kinds of people out there that want to get to know you.
Yeah, absolutely. I think another point too is it also depends on where people are at, like geographically.
Yeah.
And then especially now with COVID, like, you know, that being like a real thing as far as aftercare stuff goes, like there's people that go back to tiny towns in Indiana that don't have Refuge Recovery and Smart Recovery,
right.
Celebrate Recovery
gym.
Or CrossFit.
Or CrossFit, yeah.
So then it's like, okay, like no recovery or recovery, like, you know, so I think kind of that stigma of like, it's not like Big Mac versus Whopper, you know, it's not a fight, you know, like whatever, the goal is getting sober. How you do it? Awesome. Just do it.
Just do it.
Yeah.
Well, and I think with COVID, times have changed. Like it's forcing this more virtual environment. And that could be very beneficial to somebody in a small town who wouldn't have a group or a smart meeting or these different alternatives, as people, businesses are being forced to provide, you know, virtual learning and virtual Zoom meetings and that kind of stuff. Like we're just being sort of forced into it, but maybe that's a really good thing.
Yeah.
I mean, I definitely think having both is better, but at least this is something that people can have wherever they're at.
Yeah. Absolutely. And again, it's not, I typically think in terms of, well, it's just the U.S., you know, all the meetings shut down in the U.S. Well, they're shut down worldwide.
Yeah.
And there's just thousands and thousands of meetings worldwide. And all you have to do is click on your mouse. It's, you know, so you don't have to worry about traveling to England to get to a meeting. Now you just click on a mouse and you're there in a meeting.
Right.
Yeah. Very true.
Yeah, and that's important for your recovery, especially as you leave rehab and you go into isolation or limited exposure or different types of scenarios that we've been hit with since COVID.
So true.
Even us, I mean, our virtual outpatient has 10x since we started, just because people need to keep with their recovery after they leave here, or as an alternative, if they can't come here, as something that they can actually do.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So this is a hard question, Scott.
Oh.
What is your, what would you say is your best pro tip on getting sober? If you had to like pick one thing that is just like the pillar of recovery, what would you say that is?
Wow, that is a tough question.
I guess you could have two things.
There's
if you
a
really
lot of pillars.
To.
I think for myself, it was doing it despite the fear.
You gotcha.
Know, putting that aside and just going, look, you have a choice. It, you know, I remember as a kid, how many times I approached the 10-meter platform to dive off in the pool and how many times I backed off.
Mm-hmm.
Forward and backwards, watching all my friends jump off, and I was so petrified until I finally did it and realized there was nothing to fear in the first place.
Yeah.
So, you know, to directly answer your question, it's like, yeah, I may not want to do it. I may be afraid, but you got to do it,
mm-hmm.
right?
I like that. Set your emotions for aside and do it because you have to.
Just do it because you'll never know if it's worth the fear. Right?
Yeah.
If you get through it and you go, well, that was horrible, then you can say, well, that was horrible.
Yeah,
I told you.
Don't do it again.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's a saying, and I'm going to mess this up because I'm really bad, and you'll remember this, Scott, of mixing them, but you will only regret that thing that you did not do or you should have done, or, you know,
right.
Your regrets come from not doing it, not from having done it and then failed.
Right. That's true.
That's true. And that's the number one loss that the clients I work with bring up when they're doing the losses of mindfulness is
regret.
I regret all the missed opportunities that I should have taken.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So true.
And, you know, you could 40 years from now look back and 50 years from now look back and say the same thing. Oh, I wish I would have done this. I wish I would have done that. I think the other pillar is realizing that I'm never fully well. And
mm-hmm.
I don't mean that I'm never, I mean,
I'm never doing good.
There's always room for improvement, I guess is a better way to state
it. Yeah. I like that.
Yeah. Because again, there goes the complacency. If you feel like you're fixed, then you become complacent. And then following the laws of the universe, if you're not going up, you're going right back down the other side. You're never going to just stay the same.
Right.
There's got to be continual work.
And I'll tell these guys on occasion, like my theory, you know, about problem solving. If you think you have a big problem, you'll apply a big solution.
Mm-hmm.
If you think you have a small problem, you'll apply a small solution. So you've got to approach it as you have a much bigger problem than you think you do, because then
totally.
You'll do more about it.
Yeah. And that's kind of where you come in, of helping clients like figure out like, hey, you're in denial. Like, this is a big problem.
Yeah.
And we got to just kind of isolate why.
Absolutely.
And that's probably what most of the discussions boil down to, is like why this is a huge problem.
That's it in a nutshell. I mean, it's like, let's figure out why and change it.
Yeah.
Well,
and then apply
also,
the big solution.
Oh, sorry.
No, you're okay, Ange.
Yeah. Well, and it's also in a one-on-one. So I think they're way more comfortable opening up as opposed to like the teams where everybody's sort of peer counseling one another. This is just a one-on-one where they can really like dive in there and be vulnerable in a safe environment.
Absolutely.
And without worrying what people are thinking or saying, it's probably a much more comfortable space for you to just peel those layers of the onion.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely.
Good. I was going to say something struggling to remember what it was. So if you guys have any other questions, now's a great time.
Well, I have one. Well, first of all, Scott, you just completed another level of schooling. The whole time I've known you, you've always been doing some kind of schooling. What did you just complete? This is pretty big.
I just completed my doctorate in psychology.
Nice.
So it's not, I guess, to be fully honest, it's not complete because I'm working on a research project, which will complete it. But I spent the last 5 years, you know, doing the doctor program, and then at periods questioning why was I doing this, because this is a lot of work. It was a lot more work than I planned.
That's the fear, Scott.
Because you were working the whole time with us. It wasn't like you were just full time doing the schooling. You were holding a full time schedule while still doing all that.
Right, and then it was just like, and then when you get through it, you just go, oh wow, I did that.
Yeah,
you know. I'm not sure what I did, but I did something.
You yeah. did a great job, and I want to acknowledge you because you that is much. A huge feat, and I'm yeah. very proud of you.
Thank you very much. Yeah, it was a thing. It was a thing.
And now the thing will continue as you tackle the next big thing of this dissertation.
Right.
That. So what is the research paper on? I think everyone's dying to know. Can you talk to that? Speak to it?
Yeah, I can in a general sense because the title is extremely long and I even get confused about what I'm doing. So for my degree, I had multiple interests and I kept getting told, well, you can't do that. You can't do that because it doesn't fit your degree or you're not. Yeah. So I ran into a lot of interference. So I settled on my third choice, which is now my first choice, which is developing effective sexual harassment prevention training through perceptions of various types of individuals.
Mm-hmm.
That's in a nutshell. So
in a nutshell. Wow.
There's a whole lot of things I have to do to get this project done.
I would say completely applicable in today's times to really, right. you know, either providing a new method or a new theory or a new way to outlook things or handle things as employers. I think it's extremely
right.
time sensitive to what's happening in the world today.
Well, again, it lines pretty well with what we deal here because we're talking about sexual harassment prevention, but really the emphasis on people's attitudes and how they see themselves and how yeah, they perceive perception. Other people yeah. around them. So there's a lot more clinical focus than just, you know, yes, we might be able to do something with traditional prevention efforts. But really, it's about getting people an opportunity to speak about their experience.
Yeah, like the psychology behind sexual harassment almost. Yeah, and how absolutely. It's taken and if it's taken out of context. That's crazy. Yeah,
from both sides.
From
right.
both sides.
Totally, because there's two sides to it almost always.
Yep. Right.
Yep. And a lot of it is just awareness on both sides.
Yeah.
Right.
I think that's really cool. That sounds like a paper I don't want to write.
I don't want to write either, Dallas.
And do you want to
minimum
write
minimum 100 yeah. pages? No.
It's about, yeah, it's a big, thick,
yeah.
know.
Like a textbook. Yeah. Not, yeah. not me. Not my thing.
Yeah.
Do you get to publish it when it's done?
It is published. So,
wow. I want to read it.
It will be published in, dissertation sections. It wouldn't necessarily be in a journal, a peer-reviewed journal, but it would be published. It would definitely be published, yeah.
Gotcha.
So you could access it and go, wow, you spelled that wrong. And,
yeah, right. Wow. You're going to have a lot of editing done before that.
Wow, what was this guy thinking? Yeah.
That's crazy. Well, congrats, Scott. That's a huge accomplishment.
Yeah.
So here's my question for you, Scott. Okay, as we've talked about through all the years, even just since I've known you and way before that, you've been in and out of different, helping different programs, different modalities, different recovery. Why Elevate? Why have you settled with us?
You know, again, I think, Angie, it comes back to the different approach, right? And then it's part the approach, but the results that I see. More than anything. I mean, there's mm-hmm. some days like all of us is like, shit, I don't want to go to work. I don't want, you know, I don't mind
especially
talking
with your commute. My gosh.
Right. I don't mind talking to people. It's just probably the commute, but it's, I don't want to do this. But once you start talking to people and you start connecting with them and you start seeing that you are helping to make a difference, you know, because really I see parts of myself in every person I work with.
Of course.
You know, because they just are a reflection of who I am. I think the environment is great here. You know, and I have clients say this all the time, especially when they're towards graduation, is like, wow, everybody's so positive here and the staff have been wonderful. You know, they've just really bent over backwards to help me, you know, those kinds of things, which I didn't necessarily experience in other programs. You know, yes, you got paid and yes, you were professional. And you were doing your job, but here you get so much more because you see the fruits of your labor. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm there for the client. I'm not doing their work. They are, but hopefully I'm helping them on the way. And so that's what makes, Elevate so special is you get to see the results of people's hard work.
Yeah.
You know, I want people to be sober. I've gotten a lot out of sobriety, especially in the last 10 years. And I want other people to experience that too.
Awesome. I love that. I know you get shouted out at graduation a lot from the people that you've been the one-on-one counselor. And one thing that I always find interesting to hear as now hearing you say that about the acknowledging yourself, I reflect back to hearing clients say, first, I want to thank myself at their graduations. And I think that's, you know, very powerful and amazing. And you also give them homework. It's not like you spend your hour together and you're done. You give them stuff to think about and work on in between your guys' meetings so that it's not just the work they do with you, but there's more work that they're doing outside of you. And then you check back in with them.
Absolutely. In fact, somebody today who was struggling with some early child stuff, and it was pertinent to say, look, would you be willing to write a letter to yourself when you were this age? And I don't care what you write. I don't care what ages you choose, but I want you to experience, re-experience in a bit of what you felt like when you were this age.
Right.
He was like, yeah, I'll do that. And I was like, great. You know, it's not graded. You know, I'm not going to check it for spelling. And the next time we meet, we'll talk about it. So things like that, you know, give them a lot of journal assignments because, sometimes they just respond better to the writing. Other people don't. They don't like the writing.
Or they respond to the books you have them read. They'll read the books in their off time, and that works for them. Or they'll make calls because you suggested, you know, reconnecting with a certain person or thing, or they have that realization.
Yeah, and somebody else yesterday who, granted, is new and pretty self-absorbed, I said, look, and I tell this to a lot of the males, you know, next time you talk to your spouse or girlfriend, make the conversation about them. Mm-hmm. Quit talking about you. Talk about them. Ask them how their day was. You know, if you want to start rebuilding trust, then you have to be invested in their life. And they're like, okay, I'll do that.
Yeah. And then they find out that works.
Right. And then the wife or girlfriend's like, what's wrong with them?
Exactly. That's really the main reason, because it kind of blows their mind. Like, what's going on? You're different.
Yeah.
Right.
I've had an example of that happen real time where we're doing a rebuilding trust call, and the mother of the son was like being very strange in like your classic setting of your son calling to apologize, and the phone was on speaker and I was sitting right there, and the mom was like, hey, will you give your counselor the phone? And I was like, yeah, I'm right here. Like, what's going on? You know? And she's like, will you take me off speaker? And I was like, oh, this is going to be strange. And she's like, he's on drugs. I was like, okay, I've been with him all day. He looks fine. I'm looking at him in the eyes. His pupils are normal. Like, I don't believe your son's on drugs. We could UA him for you, though, if that would make you feel safer. And we'll look into it, you know. And she was like, no, like, he never apologizes. He's never this nice.
Yeah.
Is he even there? Are you even a counselor?
Wow.
I was like, you know, and had to like.
There's some trust to be rebuilt there. Boy.
Yeah, there was some trust that was just shattered. But yeah, just like that perfect example, you know.
It's crazy because, yeah, people become different and the families notice that they're different.
Yeah.
You know, and one of the other things I tell my guys, my clients is, you know, by you coming to treatment, it took a lot of courage to make yourself vulnerable, but you have broken through that barrier where your family and friends will now get help too. It's a strange phenomena where because you took the risk, they will start to see changes and look and do their own work themselves.
Of course.
You know, and that happens. Families start going to therapy or, you know, dad stopped drinking because their son's in treatment. It's just a crazy thing.
Yeah. The trickle down effect.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's cool with responsibility, too, because it goes both ways.
Mm-hmm.
Most of the time, these clients call and want to own up to what they did wrong. And 99% of the time, the person on the other side of the phone takes a look at themselves, too, and say, you know what? I think I played a role in this as well.
Absolutely.
And sorry about that. So, it's like you're saying, them confronting their issues allows for more issues to be kind of unraveled and looked at, too.
Right. So, indirectly, we're also helping the families heal.
Right.
I mean,
that's true.
The reality is, yeah, we are.
Yeah.
Yeah. And we teach that, the five row theory here, which is, you know, you don't just affect yourself. If you were to picture yourself on a plane, you would affect five rows in front of you, to the side of you,
absolutely,
and behind you. So your actions make that effect, good or bad.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, when we get sober, we start to realize, you know, and I think we found 99.9% of the people we help are all really good people. And they want to do good things. They don't want to hurt those five rows around them. They want to, you know, help and be a good example.
Absolutely.
Yeah, very true.
And that's probably one of the bigger things that people discover is they're not really that bad. They were just doing bad things.
Right. No, rarely, as you said, 99.9% of people don't wake up going, I'm going to screw people's lives over today. I'm going to hurt other people. That's not our intention. Our intention is never that. It's I have to drink or do drugs because of these reasons, but we don't realize who else we affect.
Of course. And there's the whole duality aspect of you can't be good without being bad in the first place. So yeah. If you're bad, you're also good. And if you're good, you're also bad. But what do you want to be today?
Right. Exactly. Exactly.
That's a good way to look at it.
Sometimes that lands so well with clients, and other times they're like, that's the dumbest thing I've ever heard. I'm like, yeah, well, your call. You know?
It's your choice.
It's not a one.
I understand it. I understand it. I want you to.
Right.
Oh, man. Well, I guess I got one final question for you, Scott. And this kind of touches on, you know, like your own recovery and how it trickles into you as a counselor or a therapist or a clinician. And I thought about it when you were saying, like, everyone has the days they don't want to go to work, right? So how do you take care of, like, how do you make sure you're showing up for the clients when there's those days that you don't want to, or the days that are harder for you? Like, is there anything specific that you do to show up as like a better version of yourself for them? Does that make sense?
Yeah. I think, you know, I'm looking for the correct word, but I can't think of it, so I won't use it. I resign myself that by the time I get to the end of the driveway, I better be on.
Mm-hmm.
Right. There have been times where I've had to, like, you know, I'll see someone at 10 and 11 o'clock. I'm like, I can't do another one. I just can't right now. And I'll put it off until 1.
Right.
But I better be ready at 1. Because again, it's, you know, I may not say anything or do anything that has any dramatic effects towards somebody else's life in a session. But it could be one of those things, what I do say may have a negative impact. And
right.
So I'm very careful to not jeopardize anybody else's recovery. I really try to be sensitive to that. Like if I'm not on, then I'm not going to see anybody.
Yeah.
You know, and that means if I take a walk, if I haven't eaten, I haven't noticed that too. If I don't eat, then I'm not as effective as when, you know, those rudiments are in.
Absolutely. And that's what it starts with, is yourself.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
How can you be there for someone else if yourself is lacking or inhibited in some way?
Right.
Yeah. I think that's a veteran move. That's kind of why I asked.
It is.
Because
it is.
You saying, like, there's days we all don't want to be at work, it's the truth. So I think, you know, you acknowledging that and knowing that that plays a role in us showing up for these guys is huge. I think to ignore it is ignorant, you know?
Absolutely. You know, with all of us, when we come to treatment, we have major trust issues. And so to participate in making that worse would be the worst crime in the world.
Yeah,
right? If I destroy your trust in the process, in me, in the facility, in all the other staff and clients, then, you know, what does that say about me? So it's like, I don't ever want to betray someone's trust.
Of course. Yeah, great answer.
Yeah,
I'm glad I asked.
Yeah, love that.
And do you have any final thoughts or anything like that?
Final thoughts? I mean, I feel like we could just pick your brain for hours here.
Yeah, this is fun.
Literally. I mean, you're just super knowledgeable. You've been around for a long time. You have a lot of great insight, and I've really enjoyed our talk today.
Yeah, I have too. Thank you, guys. This, surprisingly, not what I expected, but I do.
What were you expecting?
I don't know. I mean, I mentioned it to Tots. He goes, oh, yeah, it's fine. You just sit around a microphone and talk. And I was like, oh.
Coming from the guy that held his breath the entire time.
Tots?
That's the most Tots answer I've ever heard.
Yeah,
you'll just be in there with a microphone. Don't worry about it.
Yeah, that'd be cool.
No big deal.
No, I really appreciate the questions because they were thought-provoking. And, you know, I do respect what you guys do. You know, this is because you're part of this facility. And it's obvious that whatever we're doing is working.
Absolutely.
I mean, there's no arguing that.
Whatever this is.
Yeah, I like that.
Whatever the heck we put together here and this group we've assembled.
Whatever we do here is having a positive impact. I mean, you know, and it's not just one person. It's the entire group.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, and that's the common thread. We all, you know, have a common desire to help people.
Yeah.
And this is the perfect vehicle for us to all be able to do that in a group type setting of camaraderie where, you know, we're just here to help others
Absolutely.
Who are like us.
Okay, one last thought. And that's perfect because, you know, in the past programs, I always felt it was my responsibility alone. You know,
right.
Here, if I'm not getting through to a client or they're not, you know, as talkative as I want them to be or talking about things, I know that they're going to go to education, they're going to go to experiential team, or they're going to see Dallas or whatever, and they're going to get it there. And so it's not solely my responsibility. Mm-hmm. That, and that's a huge weight off me because, you know, if we're not jiving me and the client, then I know they'll get what they need other places.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
There we go. Well, this has been a great conversation, Scott. We're super glad to have you on the show.
Yeah,
we might
thank
have
you,
to
Dallas.
Do a part two.
Yeah, we might have to do a follow-up and we'll delve into all kinds of other stuff.
Cool.
Yeah.
Scott Friend, part two. Stay tuned.
Yes.
Yeah.
All right, guys, that's our show for today. We hope you found some value from listening. And if you did, please share with someone you know or love. You can find us on social media. We are at Elevate Addiction Services.
And if you or a loved one are struggling with addiction, please call our toll-free, confidential 24-hour helpline at 833-33-SOBER or visit our website at elevaterehab.org.